Warning, this show will now contain twice as many fucks on average.
Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by Medivax, the vaccination against vaccinations. Do you trust medical advice from booger-eating ex-Playboy models over that of actual doctors? Do you just not care what science has to say about science? Well then, thwart the Illuminati's nefarious plans with Medivax. Our proprietary formula guarantees that regardless of what secret alien race inoculation you got, you'll stay sick like God intended. Medivax, because shape-shifting lizards from Mercury are giving us autism. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
My adult child just came out. What do I do? You know, the answer depends. If they profess to be a Christian, you have to alienate them. So you isolate them. You don't have a meal with them. You separate yourself from them. You turn them over to Satan, as it were, as Scripture says.
I am Dan Finca of Camels with Hammers, and we did, in fact, evolve from filthy monkey men.
Thursday.
It's June 19th.
And it turns out that playing a real sport, but only with your feet, is actually still pretty exciting.
USA! I'm no illusions.
I'm Ethan Wright. And from Empire City, New York, New York.
And Rebel Outpost Podunk, Georgia, this is The Scathing Atheist.
On this week's episode, Spain celebrates its annual SIDS Festival.
The Supreme Court will actually get one right.
And yes, they have a sudden infant death syndrome festival.
We'll talk about it.
Also, Dan Finca will help us be atheist better.
But first, the diatribe. As I'm walking into the gas station the other day, a couple little flyers taped to the window caught my eye, because at the top of both of them it said, "It's time for VBS." And I took a closer look, because I figured that meant I should swing by a clinic or something, but upon inspection, the "where" at the bottom of each of these was a church, which seems like an odd place to pre-treat venereal infections, so I was sure my first instinct was wrong, but neither of the flyers offered much of a clue as to what VBS actually meant. Of course, if you're from the Bible Belt or you're a former Baptist, you already know, but I'm neither, so I had to ask. So I get to the cashier, I nod over to the two little ads, and I say, what's VBS? And I could tell immediately that I'd revealed myself to be a soulless, hellbound, Jesus-hating devil worshipper. Because apparently VBS stands for Vacation Bible School, except with no L's in it. Because she said, it means Vacation Bible School. So I stood there for a second reflecting on that phrase, because it's not often that you encounter a triple oxymoron. So she adds an incredulous follow-up. She goes, you ain't never heard of Vacation Bible School? I'm still standing there. I'm thinking Vacation School, Bible Vacation School, Bible. There is no non-contradictory permutation of those words. And then I start thinking about it. It sounds horrible, right? It conjures this image of a bunch of sweaty 8-year-olds sitting in pre-war folding chairs in an insufficiently air-conditioned church basement somewhere, carefully filling in the oval that corresponds to Jesus with a number 2 pencil. And then another thought occurred to me, so I asked her, why do you think neither of those signs have crosses or anything on them? She looked puzzled by the question, but in her defense, I think puzzled is her face's default setting, so she gave me half of the word, what, and I elaborated. Well, it just seems like, you know, if this was a religious thing, there'd be a picture of Jesus on it, you know, or a Bible or a cross or something, but there's nothing on that little flyer that says religion. Now, she protested at first, insisting that they actually did have crosses on them, but I pointed out that, no, one has a picture of two apatosauruses on a beach towel, and the other one had an alligator dressed as an astronaut, neither of which, to my knowledge, belong to the traditional canon of Christian symbology, and she agreed, but still didn't seem to get my point. So I told her, I'm like, you know, doesn't it seem like false advertising? Look, imagine you're a 7-year-old, you walk by these flyers and you think, sunbathing dinosaurs, hell, count me in. So all of a sudden you're telling Mom, I want to go to VBS. But then you get there, there's no sunbathing dinosaurs, there's no space gators. It's just the same Jesus-y crap that you get on Sunday morning and Wednesday evening. But of course, I was talking to a VBS graduate, so she didn't seem to recognize what the problem was. I'm sure she knows the same as I do, that a 6-year-old doesn't recognize the difference between her teacher telling the class about science and some Christian wackaloon telling the fairy tales with Jewish origins are actually true. A kid that age just recognizes that an adult is talking to him, so whatever they're saying must be right. And make no mistake, they're specifically targeting the kids too young to know the difference. That fucking alligator was on a spaceship, not a skateboard. Of course, this doesn't seem insidious at all if you think that the Jewish fairy tales are actually true, but it should. You know, regardless of your belief, simply recognizing that other people have different beliefs should make this strike you as horribly dishonest. That sickening bullshit would be completely unacceptable in any condition but religion. Can you even imagine a political ideology deciding that that's going to be their strategy? Yeah, what we'll do is we'll invite a bunch of 8-year-olds to a pizza party, and then once they're in our clutches, we'll take a few minutes to explain just how right Ayn Rand had it. Ooh, and then we'll tell them that the monsters under the bed will rip their skin off if their parents get food stamps. You know, if these people really thought their ideas had merit, they'd be focusing their effort on college kids or high schoolers or, you know, like people who have some way of understanding the worldview that's being presented to them. But they're not interested in convincing, they're interested in programming. And if they have to lure kids in there with pizza or video games or crocodilian cosmonauts, that's exactly what they're going to do. This is not an unconscious thing. They talk about this freely in their evangelical literature. They know good and damn well that the religion shit doesn't stick if the kids are old enough to critically examine the claims as they're being made. So they target the young, and the younger, the better. Their only real hope for success is for you to internalize the hell myth before you reach the age of reason. I personally can't fathom a greater admission of guilt, a more blatant declaration that your ideas are devoid of merit. If the only way to propagate your worldview is to psychologically abuse children, it's a despicable worldview, and if you're willing to propagate it anyway, you've allowed that worldview to make you despicable.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast and bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is unburdened white man Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to explain democracy to the fine folks out there?
Okay, perfect. So when, say, 99% of people want something in a democracy, they're supposed to get that thing. That's supposed how to. It works. So when rich people start complaining about their increasingly destructive, enormous slice of pie, they can go ahead and blow me like a Nintendo cartridge.
I'm willing to
Over
bet
the
they
shirt,
won't.
Under but the pants.
It's good that you put the invitation out there.
Over the shirt, under the pants.
In our lead story tonight, in a rare case of being unwrong, the U.S. Supreme Court has declined to hear the case of Elmbrook School District versus the notoriously litigious Doe family. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals already heard this one and got it right, ruling that the Elmbrook School District could not hold high school graduation in a megachurch littered with religious pamphlets and religious symbolism. The court dubbed the practice, in fact, quote, offensive and coercive.
I'd like to think this makes the message pretty clear now. So we've considered it, and we decided it was a waste of time to even be saying this exact sentence to you right now.
Right.
No, you absolutely cannot have a public school graduation in a mosque, and yes, that's exactly the same thing.
And there's language they might understand, too. Now, the SCOTUS largely agreed, though Scalia did exercise his right to still be a misguided dick by releasing a 7-page dissent that compared to the act of forcing graduating high school students to be surrounded by evangelical paraphernalia to him being forced to listen to rock music.
Aww.
He argued that the court's earlier Grease versus Galloway decision was supposed to get rid of that whole First Amendment nonsense, adding, quote, and get the hell off my lawn, end quote.
And don't touch the cross. It's probably still hot. So just don't. And in Calacho Libre hopes to avoid trampling babies news. Thousands of spectators have descended upon the Spanish village of Castrillo de Murcia to watch the annual religious tradition called Calacho, in which a masked gimp wearing a leather mariachi demon suit hurdles clusters of infants with terrible parents.
What?
This actually happens. Yep.
Dude, that's so fucked up. Yep. My mother taught me not to play with my food and also not to leap over defenseless babies in the street. There's also
standard
that.
Mothering. Now, according to an article from the Religion News Service, I felt it was very necessary to give you a quote here. So, you know, this is absolutely real. Didn't make any of this up. Quote, the highlight remains when the eponymous Calacho, a man wearing a yellow mask, yellow jacket, tight black pants, and carrying a whip in one hand and oversized castanets in the other, runs around the village jumping over an obstacle course of babies aged one or younger,
fucking
end quote.
What? Now, and that wasn't even the craziest fucking quote in the article. My favorite was from Angel Monzo, the event organizer, who actually lamented that, quote, modernism is breaking down the way of life that leads to traditions like El Calacho, end quote. Which is the only justification that modernism should ever need. That should be its slogan. Modernity. It never inspired people in gimp costumes with whips to run around evil, kniveling babies. Best-selling point we've got to offer.
Absolutely. Now, Spade obviously has some sort of who could create the dumbest ritual contest right. going on between its towns. You know, Buñol's got a tomato-throwing contest. Pamplona, of course, famous for the adults trampled by bulls thing. Mm-hmm. Then Castrillo de Murcia gets in here for their asinine holiday idea. Against all odds, they found a crazier trampling scenario. It would be infants, clusters of infants on beds.
Now, in Spain, they've also got a celebration coming up next month where they wrestle wild horses to the ground and give them silly haircuts. That's also actually real. It makes you think that an all-baby Olympics can't be far off. You'll have the long throw and they'll have speed shaking. It'll be some kind of javelin target thing. It'll be awful. And Spanish, oh. and it'll still probably be more humane than bullfighting.
Doesn't this sound awesome? So for those of you out there looking to attend next year, I believe that Spain is a small country within Mexico, and it's where Dutch soccer fans go to put their penis. So Google something like that, and you should all be able to find it. Where Dutch soccer fans put their penis. Google it.
And in what do you call an atheistist news tonight, a new Pew survey reveals the incredible extent to which Americans hate us godless commie bastards. It turns out that in addition to being less trusted than rapists and less electable than gays, we're also the most unwanted in-laws. And they said there'd be no Triple Crown this year.
Did it. So yeah, you'd think we'd be more electable and, you know, more desirable in-laws, I get it. But I've got to admit, the rapists are relatively honest, at least compared to the normal routine of, you know, tricking girls into consensual. Now,
no.
If you don't mind, go ahead and start talking, please.
Yeah.
I'm going to walk back from this giant honesty of rapists limb I've climbed. All the way out.
Good luck with that.
Stupid fucking reason.
The survey asked 10,013 people about who they would and would not want their relatives marrying. Leading the way, of course, were people who refused to accept the divinity of an undead mythical Jewish warlock cabinet maker. Leading the demographic pack of anti-atheist bigotry were self-described consistent conservatives, 73% of whom would be unhappy if their daughter married an atheist, though admittedly 16% of them would be upset if she married outside the family at all.
They are attached to those extra fingers and toes, aren't
they? Well, right, and the webbed hands come in handy for fishing. You get that?
And from the Maple Leaf Drag File, Canadian photographer, queer Muslim, and contradiction in terms, Samra Habib is proud to present her new photography exhibition entitled Just Me and Allah, which opened yesterday at the Toronto Public Library.
Now, admittedly, I don't usually see eye to eye with the fundamentalist Muslims, but I was offended by this whole exhibit as well. For fuck's sake, just Allah and me. Not me.
Grammatically.
Just get it fucking right if you're going to fucking put it out in the damn papers and shit.
Broken Canadian command of English aside, Ms. Habib has managed to combine the ideas of Canada, Islam, and gay photography all into one headline. So, pretty sure the rule says we segue straight from ridiculous attempt at reconciling Islam and homosexuality directly to putting 30 seconds on the clock. Gay Canadian Muslim porn, obviously, fucking go.
Wow. You wouldn't want to make this one easy on me. Okay, gay.
This is a stretch.
Okay, how about Mecanadian bacon? Oh, shit. Wait, no, wait. They can't have bacon. How about the Calgary Flamers that are Muslims? Shit, that's a lot of stuff.
All right, what about Bitch and Butch Cassidy and the Sunni Dance Kid, Schner, Ontario? Damn, this is hard.
It is. Put it. Oh, I got one.
Obscure.
And I think, yes, it's got all of them. All About the Boot, Carnal Adventures. Canadian, gay, it's Muslim. And yes, I got it all.
They do say that wrong. All right, what about Snatch to Snatch Me If You Con? With Muslims.
Yeah, fuck! Right? It's tough.
Oh, I almost had that one.
Strap Ontario, camel toe to camel toe. Got camel in there, so it's kind of
right.
They're racistly Muslims.
Arab, indeed. Or camel toe to moose knuckle.
There you
Canada
go.
Canada has meese, right?
They do.
Camel toe to moose knuckle with two-headed Ramadongs by Peter Great White North.
Nice, dude. Well done.
Line of halal-friendly two-headed dongs. That's the thing.
All right. How about Fat Winnipeg, man on Manitoba? This is hard. It's hard. They can't all be good.
Tough one. There's something about fairies starring Karan Jeremy.
There you go. All right. Excellent. All right. How about Imama's Boy 4, Halifax and Halifax? Not necessarily gay, but it could be. Not exclusively.
Iraq Paper Scissoring Night at the Klondike Bar?
Oh, nice.
I think that's
nice.
I'm picturing like crotchless burkas. That's got to be a thing that exists. Sell them at Adam and Eve with a Y because it's gay and Canadian.
All right. How about a gay Canadian Muslim hookup site called Alami? And the tagline could be, hold on, I think I got this. Fuck the Quran, blow a dude in Toronto. Then it would rhyme. Like, nothing rhymes with Toronto. I mean, what the hell am I going to do? Toronto isn't all that gay.
You got to be careful, though. Without condoms, sketch you an STD. Oh. Seriously, who's fucking with teleprompter? That's just awful. Puns again?
And from the Oklahomophobic file Rocky tonight, mom. Oklahoma State House hopeful Scott Esk is feeling a remarkably muted speckling of local controversy after a Facebook post came to light that would have left Hitler whispering Atne and Ublik pay uday. When asked by one of us smart-ass atheists on Facebook if he would support executing homosexuals by stoning, Esk astonishingly found a worse answer than yes.
He really did, though. It was more like, yes, and I'm so glad you asked, because right. I've really thought this out. I have a nuanced view on this particular subject. The whole murdering gays question actually gets right to the heart of my platform. So thank you. Again, for asking.
So here's his actual response. Quote, I think we would totally.
And right there. Already a bad start. He's not,
anything but no.
Right, exactly.
So, quote, I think we would totally be right to do it. That goes against some parts of libertarianism, I realize, and I'm largely libertarian, but ignoring as a nation things that are worthy of death is very remiss. End quote.
Who's willing to drop the libertarians just for a second?
Just to kill gays, yes. So the only thing that S could think of that might make fatal xenophobic vigilante bludgeonings objectionable is that it might cost him some of the Tea Party vote.
What if a gay wants to kill another gay? Are we going to deny him that right by killing the first gay?
Great question.
Doing thing. And in Museum of Supernatural History news, the surging demand in Boise, Idaho for a brick-and-mortar version of pseudoscience websites finally led to the grand opening last Saturday of the Northwest Science Museum Vision Center, or NSMVC, which kind of sounds like a real thing that mm-hmm. could give information. So government-subsidized inefficient potato farmers finally have a place where they can find information about creationism, besides CompuServe, I guess. That's good.
Best quote from the video, in my opinion, had to be when the narrator comes on and actually says, quote, the Northwest Science Museum will be unique among creationist-based museums because it will be designed as a true science museum, end quote.
Would be unique.
Yes. So full credit to him for at least recognizing what was wrong with the other creationist museums, but I don't think they got it right, but they knew where the problem was.
Okay, now I know what you guys are thinking. You're listening, you're saying to yourself, so far, I'm on board with these Bible guys. I don't know. Unless they say something stupid and horrible about, like, science causing genocide, something like that. So I'm here to tell you they actually might have slipped up and done that.
And with a tip of the hat to Godwin's Law.
One spokesman during the ridiculous trailer nonchalantly calls evolution absurd, then goes on to explain how Charles Darwin personally built Auschwitz. Quote, Hitler and his Nazi regime could never have done what they did without the foundation of Darwinian evolution, end quote. So
what?
Hitler was doing, like, pros and cons with all the high-ranking Aryans. Of course, we do love all these Jews around here. That's a fact. However, have you guys seen the shape of these tortoise shells in Galapagos Islands. Take a look at it.
Oh,
so,
well, that's
yeah, it's right here.
About it like
I guess
that,
we kind of got to do that Holocaust thing we were talking about, right? I mean, it's just a matter of the shells. Like, we're not trying to be an asshole, but look at the shells.
And finally tonight, and I too watch the soccer ball game news, Jewish groups have finally exposed Nike for the secret vehicle of international Nazi propaganda that it's always been. Having successfully disguised themselves for decades as a prosperous manufacturer and retailer of barbarically overpriced athletic apparel, the veneer of corporate greed that successfully cloaked the company's anti-Semitic underpinnings was disunmistakably exposed in a 5-minute animation that has absolutely nothing to do with Judaism.
It's got this bad guy robot coach who looks like South African George Steinbrenner, you know, evil suit turtleneck combo going on. So like you said, Jews aren't even involved in it. But even if they were, I refuse to believe there's a stereotype about Jews or Israel that says, you know, the real problem with Israel is how annoying they are to play soccer with. That's what's leading to all this strife certain areas. Yeah.
Okay, so just to catch everybody up, the animation in question is titled The Last Game. It features a team of genetically engineered superhuman footballers that suck all the life out of the game by playing sound fundamentals and failing to shatter the fuck out of every brush with human contact. And if you look at them just racist enough, they look Jewish. Kind of. What's more, the obviously a soccer ball logo worn by the evil soccer clones kind of looks like a Star of David, but only if you really, really, really want it to.
So ridiculous. Now, as we've seen, the Jew card, I get it. It's powerful. Mm-hmm. You can get a lot of shit done with it. It does not cover getting offended by shapes that vaguely contain 6 lines.
Right,
so you cannot do it. You can't use the Jew card to ban hexagons. We're not doing that.
Going a little overboard there. Now, as dismissive as I am about the complaints of these whiny Jewy guys, I don't want to let Nike off the hook entirely because the video is certainly deserving of criticism. In addition to lacking character development and structural depth, it was filled with all these unrealistic plot vehicles like a healthy Cristiano Ronaldo and athletic Jews, which kept taking me out of the film.
And apparently LeBron James's contract says his image has to appear in like every Nike ad ever.
Where did that come from?
Out of nowhere, he dunks a basketball at the very end of the commercial for no reason. And you could tell it was CGI because 3 guys didn't have to carry him awkwardly up to the basket and then carry him back off the court in embarrassment.
Well, in defense, it was warm. So I guess we'll close on that long overdue LeBron dig. Heath, thanks as always.
Big bang, chocolate.
And when we come back, Dan Finkel will be here to show us
the rebound. He's heating up. He's on fire.
As I was saying, and when we come back, Dan Finkel will be here to show us that having the right conclusion is not the same as having the right argument.
Nope.
Really excited to welcome our next guest to the show. Dan Finke is a prolific blogger. He publishes the Camels with Hammers blog at perpetual NaNoWriMo pace, where he discusses philosophy, atheism, and apologetics. He's also a philosophy professor, which, as we learned from God's Not Dead, makes him the de facto nemesis of all things holy. So, Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Noah. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's like talking to a real-life Kevin Sorbo. I'm so stoked. Speaking of which, you actually had a damn interesting response to that movie. You mind telling our listeners about the challenge that you issued?
I challenged people who liked the movie, theists, to take a class with me, a real atheist philosophy professor, me, and to see if they could defeat me in these arguments for the existence of God. And then what I would do is I'll give them, you know, my understanding of the best arguments on their side and you know, try and teach them and see what they can do with that. And also opened it up to atheists that if they want to know, you know, how I would go about as a professional philosophy professor making these arguments, they can take the class with us and learn about the, you know, the best arguments on both sides and my strategies.
Awesome. So I'm assuming the Christians just lined right up for that, right?
There was one.
Now, is this something that's still ongoing, though, that people can still sign up?
Yes, yeah. There's 2 versions of the class. The one is already running. That actually has 1 Christian and a Mormon and a couple other people who are on the fence, actually.
Okay.
And then there's going to be now live interactive video ones. So you kind of talk to me face to face on the video on your computer. It'd be fantastic.
Excellent. I'm sure I've got a few listeners that would be interested in that, and I also have a few listeners who'd be interested in maybe pushing their brother-in-laws or something to that. Now, as interesting that as that is, the main reason that I asked John today is I've seen you dismantle any number of religious arguments on your blog, but I've also seen you dismantle some of the popular atheist arguments as well. And I feel like in this movement, we're all guilty of occasionally falling into the echo chamber and using these arguments that we don't really critically examine, which works fine because nobody's challenging you on them. And then you come across a well-read theist and they make you look stupid. So Dan's here to help us all avoid that fate. But before we get into that, I think we should tackle this fundamental question. Is it, in your mind, appropriate to talk people out of their faith?
Yes, absolutely. The way I view it is that, you know, faith's attempt to talk about questions of metaphysics, ethics, how to live our lives in the most basic ways and who we are as people in the most basic ways. And those are subjects that we should, of all subjects, get as rational as possible because real world impacts hinge on them. So the idea that those would be off limits, these most important questions of who we are and where we're going and what's right and wrong, that's just insane to put those things off limits. So that's what faith, that's what arguing about faith really comes down to, what is true and what is real and what is good. So yeah, by all means.
All right. Okay, so we're armed now with a moral justification. So let's talk about how not to do it. Are there any particular arguments that draw your epistemological ire, or is it more methods of argument?
I would say, yeah, there are certain arguments which are bad, and I think that more than anything, I think there are well-intentioned lines of attack that I think are just really screwed up. Let's put it that way. So one of the ones that's kind of silly is the idea that, well, we're all born atheists, mm-hmm. and so the theist can come back and say, no babies like Christopher Hitchens, you know, and
it's right.
Babies don't have opinions on anything with respect to these issues. So citing the opinions of babies is kind of ridiculous.
When you put it that way, it should seem obvious to people, but yeah.
Right. Now I do see the point of that, you know, religion's indoctrinated into people, or maybe you don't want to label children as, I understand that those might be interesting arguments. You know, but even there, I think there's a terrible disadvantage we have in that the vast majority of people, probably 80-90% of people, you know, believe in the supernatural of some kind. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to go on what the original equipment of the human brain is and use that as authoritative about something, mm-hmm. the original equipment of the brain leads to supernaturalism. So, you know, humans invented religions all over the world and supernaturalism all over the world. So the idea that it's just this social invention that has no rooting in the human brain, like that it's some alien imposition on humans, mm-hmm. is really backward.
Right, right, exactly. We are not programmed for critical thought when we come out of the womb, so I can see a thousand ways that that's a crappy argument.
Yeah.
And yet it's one that you hear constantly, in the same sense that I guess rocks are atheists.
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, the other thing is to say that, you know, the religion is the root of all evil, or that mm-hmm. there's this famous quote from Steven Weinberg that you can get good people to do bad things with religion. You know, it says with or without religion, you can get good people doing good things and evil people doing evil things. But for good people to do evil things, that takes religion. And that argument that's an argument just completely ignores the existence of well-meaning people who are ignorant and mm-hmm. misinformed, or well-meaning people who in their self-righteousness think that they can do evil things, and they don't have to have religion for that psychological phenomenon.
Right.
So, you know, there's just so many ways that somebody who's basically good and means well, or they could be so interested in following their duty that they allow really great evils because they just think in a very black and white sense about good and evil and can't deviate. So there's just so many ways that good people don't require religion specifically. Now, religion, there's a point in there that there can be certain things that someone would have no other reason to do,
right?
Except they think religiously they have to. Well, then that could be really bad if that religious belief is ill-founded. That's a terrible reason to do that. The other thing I would say is that atheists give a lot of terrible, shallow explanations of religion or why people are religious, which just show a lack of interest in being, you know, critical about the subject. So just saying that religious people are mentally ill, you know, as you know, that's just no respect for the serious problem of finding a pathological cause of irrationality. You know, that certain people's brains, certain people's neurology has specific neurochemical bases for why they err. That's a serious problem, figuring out what a mental illness is. Whereas religion is something that otherwise rational people engage in, and people are argued out of it. And you can't, you know, it's not like a mental illness where there's something really physiologically problematic. The thing about religion is that these sorts of beliefs are actually problems of the normal brain. They're normal breakdowns of our reasoning. And so I can understand saying this is something no one would believe, some particular religious belief. No one would believe this unless it was religion or a mental illness that caused them to believe that. That's true. But when people believe an absurd thing within a religion, it's because their community has found some way to live that involves speaking in this way and thinking in these categories. And as conformists who follow their group and what's worked for their group, their brain rationally says, I'll go with the group's categories.
Right.
And that's, you know, a pretty good inference in most of human history that the people around me basically know what they're doing and I'll accept their categories. You don't have to be mentally ill to make that judgment, even if their categories are archaic and wrong.
Yeah, and a lot of people say you should avoid that one because it's unnecessarily insulting to religion. It's also insulting to people with real mental illness.
Right, because it turns, you know, because what it does, it makes them the paradigm of terrible, right?
Mm-hmm.
And similarly with the word stupid, you know, this is one of my crusades, so to speak, is that the atheist community is just, you know, I used to try and say to religious people that when we criticize them, they say, well, you're calling us stupid. And I'm saying, no, we're just saying you're wrong. And there's nothing inherently abusive or demeaning about saying someone's wrong. Here's our arguments and our evidence. We're not saying you're incapable of understanding. But then there are a lot of atheists who call people stupid. And what that does is so many kinds of wrong. Because, again, first of all, the worst thing about it is that it's elitist. And atheists already have the perception of thinking we're smarter than everyone else. So when we actually call people stupid, we're just reinforcing their negative stereotype about us, that we're abusive rather than just reasoning with people, that we're interested in bullying, because stupid is a bully word. It's also elitist because a lot of people who are, you know, more religious people, like it correlates negatively with education. So the more educated you are, the more likely you are to be an atheist. The less educated, the more likely to be religious. The point of that is that there are a tremendous amount of people who feel looked down upon by educated people or who their entire lives were told, you're stupid. It's a bully word that has been, you know, used to hurt those people. And so if atheists come along and say, here, we want you to abandon the most fundamental beliefs you have and your entire sense of worth is bound up in you're being a child of God, and you know what? You're stupid. They're not going to be willing to give up this thing which gives them meaning and value and a sense of worth to someone who calls them something like that. But the other thing is that you don't have to be stupid. I wasn't stupid. I was a very smart person. I went on to get my PhD. I know plenty of other religious believers with PhDs. If you have the wrong starting premises, or if you live so immersed in a world in which your categories are set up a certain way, you could be extraordinarily logical. And you can be creative, and you can be, you can be imaginative, and you can find all sorts of logical structures to explain the interconnections of your beliefs, and not at all be stupid. And plus, religious people are able to pay their taxes; they're able to hold down regular jobs. They walk among us, right? They're scientists, you know. They're not a bunch, you know. They're not just this set of stupid people in the corner. And then finally, again, it's really cruel to the actually intellectually struggling people out there,
right,
to then make them the paradigm of terrible when sometimes there's no control over that. What we need to do, what's also lazy about it to me is that it's a fascinating philosophical and psychological problem. How do you persuade people out of what they've been conditioned by family and culture and their own brains on normal cognitive biases that we all share. These are tremendously interesting subjects. How culture shapes beliefs, how cognitive biases shape beliefs, how the mind can learn critical thinking skills to overcome its innate errors. Those are fascinating subjects. And when I hear an atheist say religious people are just stupid, I hear the atheist saying, I'm not interested in actually understanding this complicated phenomenon and learning about persuasion techniques. I want to feel smarter. I want to abuse. I want to push back with negativity. I'm not hearing a critical thinker there.
No, that makes perfect sense to me. And I, of course, my listeners may have noticed that occasionally I've called religion or religious people stupid in the past. And I just want to point out that Dan's talking about when you're talking with theists. This is a show that no theists are listening to this show, so it's okay in this particular instance. But no, I couldn't agree with you more, because for a person like myself that was not raised with religion, that's been an atheist pretty much as long as I can remember, it is very difficult to get into that religious mindset and recognize that if you were raised in that environment, you would almost certainly, whether or not you were religious at this point in your life, would have been religious at some point, and you wouldn't necessarily have been stupid up until your deconversion. But it's very difficult, because obviously when you're on the outside looking in, that stuff looks crazy stupid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And rationally, it doesn't make any sense. But, but all of us live with contradictions. And not to say that that makes it all equal, but our brains are not wired to just go straight for truth. That doesn't mean they're incapable. And I don't think it helps to encourage someone to feel like you think they're incapable.
Right. But were there any other ones that you wanted to tackle specifically?
Well, yeah, I mean, related to that one, we could also get into, like, religions are the cause of all wars in human history, right?
Religion is the cause of all blank. That sentence is almost certainly crap unless the blank is religion.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, and the way that I would quickly, or as quickly as I can, put that problem is that, look, religions are always in a cultural context, and that means that psychological, social, economic forces, these are always at work, and a particular religion, its expression, is always going to be in a particular context culturally. And that means that it's sometimes going to be a proxy for other things. People are going to psychologically feel a certain way. So, like, right now, more and more Christians are becoming pro-gay, and they're going to find a way to say that in their religious terms, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, when they were pro-slavery, they found a way to say that in their religious terms. So there are other factors at work that make people have their views, even when they're expressing them religiously. Now, that's not to say religion's off the hook. That's the problem. See, on the one hand, you have people who say, well, there's a religious factor involved, therefore Islamic terrorism is all about religion. Mm-hmm. Or slavery in America was all about religion. Well, no, it's a mixture of things. The problem of the person who defends religion is they want to say something like, religion is in no way to blame for an Islamic terrorist, right?
Right.
That's not real religion, or like I heard recently MSNBC called Fred Phelps in the Westboro Baptist Church pseudo-religious, not really religious.
Yeah.
That's an overcorrection, right? Mm-hmm. There's definitely religion is partially to blame, and other things are to blame. And so rational thinkers should be sensitive about that. We should call people on it. Like I just read someone say, we have to teach evolution in the classroom. This isn't about religion. It's about science. And I'm like, no, it's about religion. And so, creationism is partially a religious problem. And so, you have to deal with the parts that are religion, but also look at the parts that aren't. Because here's what happens. We don't want to become the useful idiots for, people who want to do terrible things, and they want us to be on board because they're going, see, it's religion's fault. We're like, yeah. And meanwhile, they're doing terrible economic things or political things or social or psychological things. And we're not able to see that because the role that economics and the role that psychology and the role that international politics are playing is obscured, because we atheists just see religion. And we don't understand the way that some of the ways that religion is manifesting is actually because of other evil institutions. And if we were to change those, maybe the religion would be better too.
I have a sneaking suspicion I could keep this going for about another 2 hours before I started getting bored of it. But we are on a bit of a time schedule. So, of course, if you want to read more about Dan's thoughts on this subject and many others, he's got a blog on Pathos. Again, the name of the blog is Camels with Hammers. You'll find it linked on the show notes for this episode. And you also do online philosophy courses, right?
Yes. Write me at camelswithhammers@gmail.com. And if you want to inquire about taking a philosophy class with me, I teach ethics, Nietzsche, philosophy for atheists, and the one on the debating God's existence.
Excellent. And I'll have a link to that email address on the show notes as well. Dan, thanks so much for your time and for all your efforts in slaying the dragon thou shalt.
Thank you very much.
And when we return, Lucinda will join us to learn that even the best parts of the Bible make Archie Bunker look like a feminist.
The Holy Babble.
A couple of weeks ago, Valerie Tirico published an article on Alternet in which she asked a number of prominent atheists to share a passage from the Bible that they actually found inspiring. Hemant Mehta, Greta Christina, John Loftus, Dale McGowan, and a number of others answered the call, with more than a third of the chosen passages coming from the book of Ecclesiastes. But like every movie with a good preview, that left me with impossibly high expectations for this book. So sure, it did not live up to the hype, but it was by far the best book of the Bible thus far.
Yeah, I did not expect the Bible to have an atheism section.
Right.
So that was a nice surprise. That was not...
But as not as bad as it was still pretty bad. So joining us for this partial reprieve from the horrors we've come to expect from this thing is my lovely wife, Lucinda. Lucinda, welcome back.
Happy to be here.
Only because that means that you're off the hook for another 3 weeks about having to read another book of the Bible. So let's just dive into Ecclesiastes, shall we?
You got it. So the opening chapter is poetic, and there's a refreshing bit of nihilism to it, actually.
Must be exhausting.
Yeah, the author also says that the sun revolves around the earth. Mm-hmm. 5th century BCE technology will never be surpassed.
No.
And that he's really, really wise.
Doubting it.
And to add to the little nihilism bit, according to the King James anyway, much like the dude, the earth abideth.
Yes,
that's
it does.
That's a real quote.
The
earth abideth. And also, is it a good thing when one of your first chapter headings is called Wisdom is meaningless?
Right.
Right.
Here's what that part says. Quote, "For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief." End quote. Instead, it's faith in the Bible that leads to happiness. So let's just recap. Ignorance is bliss. And faith is bliss. Now, who remembers how this works? We say one more thing, I think, then QED, and we get a point, right?
And early and often we get this all things are vanity motif, which sounds good, except that the person who's telling you this, ostensibly Solomon, but definitely not actually Solomon, is the most vain person on earth. He says, you know, at first it was all about hoarding wealth and fucking hot chicks and owning the shit out of some other human beings. And then I realized, you know what? That's kind of vain. Well, bully for you.
He points out, I didn't just buy slaves. I also started breeding them indoors like pot. But in the end, even my awesome slave-spawning indoor operation, it was meaningless when I really thought about it. So there's a lesson there.
Right, and then he says, I devoted myself to wisdom and got way smarter than anybody else who ever lived in all of history. And then I realized, hey, you know what? This is kind of vain, too.
Yeah, maybe.
You know what, dude? I'm betting everybody else realized you were a vain douchebag way before you did.
Right.
I'm just saying.
Good point.
Everybody knows who that guy is.
Yeah.
And there's this little stab at profundity that says, and how unfair is it that people like me die just like stupid people who don't have a bunch of golden concubines? You ever thought of that?
I feel like they just said, you know, just throw the ancient Chinese secret stuff in with the atheist book. We're probably not even going to use it anyway. Just we're going to put that all together.
Right, and then the Bible blatantly rips off the birds, turn.
But they don't know how to rhyme.
No, because it was so fucked up, because as I'm reading it, I couldn't help but sort of sing it to myself. So I'm like, you know, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up that which is planted. It just like fucked me all up. I couldn't get through that bit.
And also some of that stuff, there's no time for. There's no correct time to throw stones at people. Seriously.
Yeah. And here's a nice Bible passage, by the way, to have in your pocket for all of those anti-evolution nut wrinkles who claim that there's some special divinity for humans that negate the observable facts. Ecclesiastes 3:18-19. I said in my heart with regards to human beings that they are but animals, for the fate of humans and the fate of animals is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath, and humans have no advantage over the animals, so fuck off. Admittedly, the last three words are editorial, but the rest of that's real Bible.
Pretty much what it said.
All right, chapter 4, we get a few pearls of wisdom in this one, too. For example, it's better to pee downwind mm-hmm. than to have urine in your face yeah. while God shits in your mouth. So while God's shitting in your mouth, the urine in your face would be the bad thing, pee downwind. And that's the thing. That guy was going to shit in your mouth no matter what. So it's all meaningless. Right. That's what you got to remember. That's the lesson.
Right, and then there's some good stuff about not being obsessed with wealth, and I pretty much agree with all of that, but it's still tainted since it was a book designed for rich people to read to poor people. I'm pretty
right.
Trick them into staying poor happily.
Yeah, it had a bit of an air of, no, trust me, all this wealth and gold and shit, huge pain in the ass. You guys wouldn't even want it if I gave it to you. It would slow you down, cramp your style.
You don't even want to know about the white man's burden. It sucks over here.
Right.
Yeah. Everyone can't be rich, tall, and atheist, too. We can't do that, dude. That fucks up our plan.
But compared to the rest of the Bible, this shit is pretty awesome, you have to admit.
Right.
I mean, there's actually something to chew on here and there. But mm-hmm. it is depressing as all hell, though, since the primary message is, what does any of this matter, dead man walking? Yeah, I know.
And the secondary message is the person writing this book has a very weird definition of the word vanity.
Yes. Yeah. And the tertiary message is the rest of the Bible is full of shit.
Mm-hmm. And it also very specifically mentions that if you have 100 kids and enjoy a long, prosperous life, but then you don't get a proper burial, you'd be better off as, quote, a stillborn fetus.
It says that.
So literally use those words.
I don't think that means what you think it means.
They also say that dying is better than being born because mm-hmm. death is in everyone's destiny, but so is birth. They're not even trying. Let us sound proverbial as best we can, throw it out there.
Right. Now, chapter 7, you get a little bit of decent shit in the poem at the beginning, mm-hmm. but then they fuck it up with this incredibly sexist close.
Yeah, they can't get through this thing without a dig on how awful and stupid women are.
Well, and then chapter 8 opens up with a justification of the Nuremberg defense. So... Okay, it's better, but it ain't all wine and roses here.
Yeah. Yeah, I also love how at the end of chapter 8, basically it says, it's a darn shame that science will never exist, because how awesome would that be?
Right.
You know?
Great, but do not even think it's not.
Never.
Yeah, it would have been awesome. No. Yeah, basically, it ends with King Solomon saying that if a guy claims to have a bunch of wisdom about the universe and writes a book about it, you probably shouldn't believe it. Especially if it's in a book that's a collection of books about universal wisdoms. It's a bad guy to trust.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and nominate chapter 9 as the single best chapter in the Bible so far.
Here, here.
Hands down. I don't even think it's close. It does have a bit of a you're broken and only our religion can fix you kind of feel to it. But even with that, it's chocked full of good shit.
Well, but what makes it good is like Heath was saying, this is the atheist chapter. It sets aside the notion of an afterlife. It actually says in no uncertain terms that there's no afterlife. Verse 10, whatever your hands find to do, do with your might, for there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going. It's a surprisingly humanist chapter.
It is.
Must mock chapter 4. I got nothing. Actually a reasonable section of this thing. Nothing to make a redneck picket sign about. I don't even know how this made it into the final cut.
But just so that we don't start expecting insight from this book, chapter 10 starts by reminding us not to put dead flies in our perfume because it smells like shit, apparently.
Whoever's writing this thing, they're like an 8-year-old telling a joke they don't understand style mastery of Confucius Proverbs.
Right.
It can't just be two blatantly obvious statements with a semicolon in between. That's nothing.
You haven't
didn't
accomplished.
Do anything there. That's not.
I love how there's so much emphasis on how nobody knows what the future holds, too. And it says it several times, by the way, even though we're only one book away from the prophetic books.
Good point.
Yeah.
Nobody knows. Hosea and Jeremiah and all these guys with these little books at the end.
There's some good Mitt Romney type advice here in chapter 11. borrow a few thousand shekels from your parents and export grain to a corrupt foreign government or something along those lines so that you have some passive income. Just in general, be rich, you know.
It's much better than the
having money is virtuous, so borrow some. From your rich parents. What the fuck is
And then
wrong?
It reminds you to be frugal and work hard and not be a bitter asshole in your old age. And that's all good advice.
And it closes by reminding you to fear God and keep his commandments, too, which is all bad advice in my opinion.
Yeah. Now, I think it's worth noting that the two main features of Ecclesiastes that sort of set it apart are the facts that it's A, an oasis of actual wisdom in the middle of this thing, and B, directly contradictory to the entire book up to this point. So until Ecclesiastes, it's safe to say the Bible is precisely the opposite of wisdom.
But best of all, it was short.
Yeah, no, that was nice. 12 pages or so and you were done. Well, the good news, other than that we have a couple of weeks before we have to read more Bible, is that I'm pretty sure the next bit has some dicks flopping around and stuff, so the jokes should come a bit easier than they did with this one.
Penises.
Johnson? So this next book is the wordsmith from this one singing a fucking song, seriously, that he wrote.
And
he hasn't learned
song,
the guitar
literally.
Parts too yet. Yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be awesome. Fantastic. Sayonara, bitches.
All right. Thanks again for joining us, Lucinda.
Good to be here. See you in 3 weeks.
It's time for the part of the show that comes next, listener feedback. This is the portion of the show where we look at the outline and notice we're a couple minutes short of a full program, so we dig into the mailbag and let some of our wonderful listeners do the heavy lifting for us.
That's right. Our first email comes to us from an unnamed listener in an undisclosed location that writes us to say, quote, I always get a kick out of listening to your show in a country where I could theoretically get hanged for it.
Right.
End quote.
We actually got two messages from two separate listeners whose jobs occasionally take them to hand chopping off parts of the world that said the same thing. That was kind of scary. Right.
So as much as we appreciate your willingness to die for a good dick joke, you should quit your job and move right away.
Yeah.
Or get Ben Affleck to exfiltrate you or something.
Whatever
needs to be done.
Yeah, exactly. Now, our next email comes from Rick, who loves the show, but wonders if we've ever noticed that our 30 seconds on the clock bit is considerably longer than 30 seconds.
Yeah, but only the first 30 seconds are on the clock.
Right.
It's just that we're willing to give you cunt puns off the clock, too. So we're generous cunt punners. We also got a tweet from a listener who is upset about our word choice on episode 66.
Yes.
Noah was talking about beating off to a video of an underage girl pissing on a midget. Apparently the offensive part of that bit was the word midget, according to this tweet.
Right, right. And it's a listener that I'm friends with and is a good person and everything. But hugely disagree here, and this kind of stuck in my craw. If you think I should stop using that word, that's fine. You can present your case to me, but don't say midget is now offensive. You're supposed to say little people. Didn't you get the memo? Because first of all, jerking off to a video of a 17-year-old pissing on a little person, it's just not as funny.
It's
not as funny. I mean, it's still funny.
Okay, well, I agree little people is a ridiculous request. That's sure. It's like blacks asking to be called chocolatey people from now on. This is an absurd adjective.
The important thing here is that for a term to be considered offensive, shouldn't it be more about the intent, like the meaning of the person saying? In this scenario, the midget is getting pissed on in a good way. It's not
exactly. I mean, can a 17-year-old girl piss on a midget in a bad way?
Not that I'm aware of.
Now, speaking of midget porn. When a midget porn star, when they got a partial chub, do they call that a quarter mass? What's the industry term for that? Probably what they called it when Gary Coleman died. They probably flew the flags quarter mast.
Right, see, now that is...
Homage. It's an homage. I'm honoring the little
midget. Gary Coleman's
people.
Awesome. One of the best midgets. Now, the listener in question compared midget to using nigger or kike, which, to me, that's beyond hyperbole. And quite frankly, it's disrespectful to everyone who's ever been called a nigger or a kike. I mean,
absolutely.
If you look up midget in a dictionary, it says person of unusually small stature. When you look up nigger and kike, it doesn't say black people and Jews.
I can't imagine that does. But if you look up niggardly with an A, it says something along the lines of tipping like black people and Jews.
Oh, wow. Way to guarantee we have some offended listeners to respond to again next week. So
you
keeps
heard
the cycle going. Yeah, I don't think they noticed the boing. So.
All right, fine. I'm sorry. Let me walk that back a little bit. Jews are pretty good tippers. That's
you're walking halfway back, I guess. Anyway, the very idea that you can retroactively apply offense to a word is silly to me, and it misses the point. The whole thing that, you know, a bunch of us got together the other day and decided you can't say midget and it's now a slur. No, intent makes a word a slur. Midget is a fucking adjective. You know, it says that in the dictionary. If I describe a small submarine as a midget submarine, that's the correct term for that. Nobody's offended. If I described a black submarine as a nigger submarine, I would be a racist asshole. So, just...
All right, well, you set it up, so it absolutely has to be on. 2, 3, 4. We all
No, it doesn't.
In...
That doesn't absolutely have I'm to not, be done at all. I know
I
you've got the undiagnosed Tourette syndrome going, but we're not doing that one. That's
come on. Just we all live it.
Moving on.
You're not going to do it in harmony with me, no. Like we discussed. You're not going to admit that we discussed doing it in harmony.
No.
Fine.
And lastly tonight, a note on pronunciation. We had a listener send me a helpful video in response to my egregious mispronunciation of the word omniscient. The random YouTube video he sent me set me straight.
Omniscient.
But not being one to trust a single source, I listened to a second random YouTube video, and it said...
Omniscient.
So then I thought maybe random YouTube videos were an inadequate source, so I checked the Macmillan Dictionary, Dictionary.com, the Merriam-Webster, and the Cambridge Advanced Learner's Dictionary, and luckily they cleared it up for me.
Omniscient.
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 Almost like there's a legitimate disagreement on the correct pronunciation here. Look, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and I'll fix it. But until I get a definitive source, I'm just going to pronounce it how it's spelled. So just a quick reminder to any would-be phonological Nazis out there, being a pedant is already kind of annoying when you're right. So when you're...
As Noah just demonstrated. So right. That's all the feedback you get. If you want more, send us more emails, tweets, and corrections.
And thanks for those.
Noah, ones. Not me.
Before we lock the gates tonight, I want to throw a shout out to a new power hitter in the atheist podcasting world. Friend of the show, friend of the community, and friendly atheist Hemant Mehta recently debuted a new podcast to complement the great work that he and his team do over at the Friendly Atheist blog. Now, he's only got one episode out at the time of this recording, and I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but if it's anything like the work that he's done on his blog and his YouTube video series, it's going to be phenomenal. So congrats, Hemant, and I will show you the Secret Atheist Podcaster handshake whenever you have a free minute to Skype. If you're interested, of course, I'll also have a link to his new show on the show notes for this week's episode. Of course, I can't wrap up without thanking Heath for doing twice as much work to make the show happen this week. I need to thank Lucinda for lending us the lovely lilt of her voice once again. Obviously, I want to thank Dan Finke one more time for both the great conversation that you heard and the 20-minute introspective discussion on superhero movies that we had after I stopped recording. Definitely recommend his blog, which again will be linked on the show notes for this episode. I also need to thank him for providing this week's Farnsworth quote, which reminds me that I'm starting to run low on my backlog of Farnsworth quotes once again, so if you've got a blog, a podcast, a Facebook page, anything that you think might be interesting to our audience, feel free to send me a clip. And if you've already sent me a clip and I haven't used it, let me know. It's entirely possible that it's buried somewhere amongst a bunch of clips that I've already used and I've overlooked it. I should also mention that there's been a serious slowdown on our iTunes reviews. So if you haven't given us a review there, please take a couple minutes to help us out. Steady stream of reviews keeps us on the front page of our section. That helps us find new listeners. That helps keep the whole thing going. And if you can't, won't, or already did leave an iTunes review, you can cut out the middleman entirely and just tell a bunch of people to listen to our show. And also, tell them that if they don't listen, they'll burn for eternity in the underworld. Believe it or not, I've seen that work before. But of course, most of all, I need to thank this week's most bestest people, Robbie, Jeff, David, Jonathan, Pekka, Marcel, T, Kefri, Reverend, Kenny, Alexander, and Stephen. Robbie, Jeff, and David, whose erections necessitate the asterisk after the Burj Khalifa. Jonathan, Pekka, and Marcel, whose legendary kung fu leaves them entirely indifferent as to whether or not the Hulk is angry. T, Kefri, and Reverend, who are so sexy, mirror, mirror on the wall, issued an official retraction. And Kenny, Alexander, and Steven, whose testicles make sperm whales wonder if they really deserve the title. These 12 noble warriors of reason, in addition to perpetuating a damn eerie run of us receiving donations in weekly multiples of 12, have earned beer volcano front property in atheist heaven this week by giving us money. If you'd like to snatch up some of this valuable afterlife real estate before it's too late, you can earn your way into my heart, my outro, and my postmortem high rise by making a per episode donation at patreon.com/scathingatheist, which you'll find linked on our website. You can also make a one-time donation by clicking the donate button on the right side of our homepage, or you can support our efforts by picking up a copy of our first book, Diatribes Volume 1, 50 Essays from a Godless Misanthrope, at the Kindle Store or other fine online retailers. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at skatingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission.
Secondary message being this, and the secondary message being the person writing this book has a very, and the second, and the secondary message is this.
That's a record. That's like skating atheist record there. Well done, sir.